Vermont Viewpoint is a public affairs program produced and funded by WDEV and the Radio Vermont Group. We welcome listener feedback. Email your comments to vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com.
Good morning. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. I'm Rick Singeri. And it's a little bit different day here this morning because it's the anniversary of a very different day, January 6th. Last year, the riot, the attack of the Capitol, and so we thought it was extremely important for you to hear Vice President Kamala Harris and the comments of President Joe Biden talking about what happened 1 year ago today. We will pick that up at 10 o'clock with Matt Dickinson from Middlebury College, political science professor, and we will have Congressman Peter Welch with us till about 10:15 this morning. After the 10 o'clock hour. So he'll be on for about 10-15 minutes with us. For now, you can share your thoughts. And again, we'll pick this up about 10:20. We'll open up the phones, 802-244-1777, 877-291-8255. You can also email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. Very interesting to hear the comments of President Joe Biden, and some thoughts I scribbled down. I'd love to hear your thoughts, but you know, this was not a left or right conspiracy. This is, you know, we shouldn't be chastising one side or the other. We shouldn't worry about political parties, whether you're independent, whether you're Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, or what you are. This is about democracy. And we have to have faith that as Americans, we will accept, win or lose, whomever we voted for, that we will always accept the outcome. When did we get to that point where we lost, you know, there's dignity in losing, and you have to accept defeat sometimes. Think about, you know, the kids on the baseball team or the spelling bee or debate club when they lost, who, you know, stormed off in a huff. You lose. You will not win 100% of the time. Let's look at the facts of the matter. Unfortunately, Donald Trump has never won a popular election in his life. And he lost by millions of votes on November 3rd of 2019. And with dignity, we all expect the person who lost to accept that, right? I voted for so many losers in my life, and they're not losers in the respect that I'm putting them down, but people who lost elections, and you get on with it. Whether it's Emil Ilchuk running for a local election in Lehigh County, Pennsylvania, who finished in a tie once and lost a coin flip, because what? Some people who supported him didn't show up that day. This is what happens in elections. And I had to think, what if Donald Trump had won that election and the same thing happened on January 6th? Right? What if followers of Joe Biden did the same thing? And stormed the Capitol and tried to interrupt the certification of an election. All of us would be just as outraged, right? Wouldn't we? Does it matter who won or who lost or who stormed the Capitol that day? It's the fact that people went there and, again, attacked Capitol Police, something I can never accept. And tried to attack senators, representatives, and the Vice President of the United States. Think about that. All right, let's take a call from Steve and Barry. Steve, thank you for calling. Go right ahead.
Hi, Rick. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I am taking a slightly different view of this.
Good.
I think the president spent too much time talking about the election and how it had been established who won.
Okay.
That's a given. That's known.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like you, the emphasis should be on the insurrection. But more importantly than that, we have a lot of representatives in Congress and in the Senate who took an oath to defend the Constitution.
Right.
Many of these people have been silent since the insurrection. I believe they have a constitutional duty to call it for what it is and to show that they do support the Constitution.
Yeah.
Furthermore, I believe that any member of Congress who refuses to speak publicly about what it was and show that they understand should be removed from office by people running against them on that one issue. You have failed your oath to the Constitution. Nothing else, nothing about the economy or anything. Now, I know that's very radical.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's not going to happen. And I happen to be to the left of a guy whose initials are BS. Some people say I do a lot of that. But I really think we need to be speaking directly to the fact that our Constitution has not been upheld by elected representatives. And I know my friend Peter Welch is there now, and he's probably chuckling because he knows who I am. But I'll be interested in the reaction of your guests
to
what the president said. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Steve. I should mention Peter is not here in the studio. He'll be calling in after 10 o'clock. But I hope he got to hear what you had to say, Steve. Certainly, that is, you know, an extreme on one end, not to let have these people continue to serve in the Senate or Congress. Let's talk to Fred, who's joining us from Newbury. Fred, go right ahead.
Morning,
Fred. How you doing?
Oh, the interesting thing about this is insurrection. Now, the Attorney General said a myriad of charges have been filed against these perpetrators that have been arrested,
mm-hmm.
but he's never mentioned insurrection. There will be no charges of insurrection on anybody because it wasn't an insurrection. And if someone is charged for insurrection, there won't be a K Street law office that won't be on his side, the perpetrator's side.
Yeah. Fred, I know you're really getting caught up in the semantics of the word insurrection. You can call it what you like. It was a vile attack on the democratic system that we all adhere to, right? And so let's just accept that.
I agree. I agree 100% with you.
Good.
I agree 100% with you. Well, we can't use the word insurrection because it wasn't.
All right. I'll try not to use it, but I don't think that changes what happened that day. So thank you, Fred. Let's move to Virgins and talk to Dave. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning. I just wanted to say, first, President Biden, for wanting to move the country forward, spent an awful lot of time taking everyone back to November 2020's election, which is kind of surprising.
Mm-hmm.
I think the assault on the Capitol should be condemned regardless of reasoning. I think he could make that point without, again, spending so much time trying to build his security, over his defeat of Trump. But the main thing I wanted to really say is, I think the issue that I have is the disparity of the level of condemnation. I know you've addressed this, right, between January 6th and, all the riots, the lives that were changed forever, businesses destroyed, lives lost. And it just paints a picture that so much of this is partisan. It's about voting strategy for midterms. And I think they'd have more credibility if, their condemnation were a little balanced. that's what I wanted to say.
All right. Thanks, Dave. You know, I understand what Dave's saying, and I don't think that any violent protest ever should be ignored or lightened, because I think that is not how protest is effective or gets the message across. I have to agree with Dave. I don't understand protest that destroys one's own community. And I know there's anger, and I know there's rage, and so it gets out of control, but it tends to undermine the message that you have. Now, he also mentioned the president going back to November 3rd. I agree. I want to move forward, and this is a historic date, so we are going to move back a year. But going back to November 3rd and the election in 2020, you know, you have to bring it up, I guess, because that is the seed of what those who rioted are holding on to. And we'll talk more about that. I'm just waiting for where any proof of electoral misdeeds occurred. And if you have that proof, please call in. Now, we're going to go to the news now. We're going to come back from 10 to 10:15 with Matt Dickinson and Representative Welch, and then we'll pick up open phones again after the top of the hour, or about 10:20. So stick with us. We're going to take a break. We'll go to news now, and then, like I said, come back at 10:04 and really get moving on this. It's a lot to talk about this morning.
Warren Village is a picture-perfect snow globe this time of year. We invite you to visit us at the almost world-famous Warren store. Come for breakfast, lunch, or après-ski. Have a signature deli sandwich, a hearty soup, or a specialty coffee drink paired with a sweet treat from our incredible bakery. Upstairs is a cornucopia of delightful and unique finds from men's, women's, and children's clothing to gifts, toys, games, jewelry, hats, gloves, and scarves. Best one-stop shopping in Vermont, according to Yankee Magazine. Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. Warren Store, Main Street, Warren Village, and warrenstore.com.
This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. We're taking a look back at our world a year ago today. It was when the United States Capitol in Washington, D.C. was breached by an angry mob that stormed through barriers past Capitol Police and destroyed any entry portal they could find to enter the building. We've got Middlebury College political science professor Matt Dickinson. He'll be with me throughout the hour. Matt, welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint.
Glad to be with you, Rick.
And we also have Congressman Peter Welch for just a few minutes, and he'll be joining us in just a second. He just called in, and Congressman Welch was at the Capitol last year when the rioting occurred. And Congressman Welch, I want to thank you for being here as well.
Thank you.
Now, listeners, we definitely want to hear your thoughts this morning, but please be patient. We'll start taking calls again after our first break. Congressman Welch, please briefly share with us again what it was like being in the Capitol on January 6th last year.
Well, you know, it was a beautiful day, January 6th, and I live close to the Capitol. And I took a walk down the Mall and past the Washington Monument, the Lincoln Memorial, and on the way back by the White House. And, of course, the entire area was filled with the protesters at that point. But it was very alarming on the outside when I got around the White House, the Ellipse, which is, of course, where later President Trump spoke to the crowd, because there was so much anger there. And it was white hot anger and a lot of epithets at Mike Pence, hang Mike Pence, terrible things about Pelosi and all those people who worked in the building. And it's very alarming, because that anger was so abstract that it included folks like cafeteria workers and custodial staff who worked in the Capitol. But I didn't think anything of it, because it just didn't occur to me that there could be any assault on the Capitol or that any of us would be unsafe there. Of course, fast forward, we're in the I was in the gallery. Some of my colleagues were on the floor. We were all social distancing because it was the height then of COVID.
Right.
And it was really shocking to see the security people come fast to the chamber and take out the speaker, take out the majority leader and the minority leader, and to have a police officer interrupt the proceedings and tell us that the Capitol had been breached. That was the word he used, that tear gas was fired. They were assessing the situation. We went back to work. It was all surreal because even then, as that was being announced, the Capitol, which I've worked in, as you know, for 15 years, you feel you couldn't be in a safer place in the whole country. And then, of course, we heard the shot. That's when the mob was trying to break through the speaker's lobby, and that was about 20 feet from where we were. We were a floor above. And then, of course, the mob was attempting to break down those iconic doors and was successful in breaking the windows. Those are the doors that the president walks through when he comes to give the State of the Union address. And we were told to get on the floor, put on gas masks. And it was a very slow process for us to get out because when you're in the gallery, the seats are very close together, there's railings, and getting from here to there is really quite slow and difficult. But all the while, these young Capitol Police officers, who the last thing in the world they ever wanted to do was use their weapon, were put in a position where they might have to. So it was very chaotic. There was a lot of fear among everyone there because we had no idea what the situation was. But we were inside as there was just this huge battering that was the process of trying to break the doors down. So it was a harrowing experience for everyone, but obviously the implication to our democracy is what's the long-term harrowing component of this.
Yeah. We have the January 6th Commission looking into how this started, what was known. Will this give us a clear idea of what agitated the riot, how we were prepared for it, and in the end produce results?
Well, you know, frankly, I think we know how the riot started. I mean, you know, right after the election, even before it, Trump was laying the basis for claiming that the election was stolen. And he peddled that lie from before the election through the election and right up into January 6th. And a lot of folks who supported Trump, and obviously that's their right to do that, put their faith in him and believed his lie about the election. And then, of course, there was concerted efforts on his part to get the Secretary of State in Georgia to find 11,000-plus votes. There was all the crackpot legal theories and cases that were filed and all dismissed by the court. But it was all an intense process that really was managed by the Trump people and with the president's full involvement to create this theory that people acted on, that the election was stolen. So the January 6th Commission, I hope, can get to the bottom of the details. You know, they're getting like text messages, they're getting emails, and they are going to be able to reveal in detail how things happened, what the TikTok or the timeline was. But what happened is really clear. It was an assault on our democracy. It was an effort to use violence to stop the peaceful transfer of power. And what's so ominous about this was not just the violence that occurred on that day, but later that evening, it was 3 a.m, you know, Congress had to go into recess while the building was under attack. But we came back, we did our job, which is ceremonial. It's to certify and validate the election by the people of who their next leader is. But 147 of my colleagues voted against certifying the election. And that's the saddest day I've had in public life, the saddest day. Because the thing that has to bind us together, no matter how fiercely our debates are about foreign policy, about taxes, spending, health care, it has to be that the voters decide who our leaders are, not the politicians, and that we adhere to what principle has served us so well, and that's the peaceful transfer of power after an election. And that it continues to be under assault. You know, the effort was to overturn an election with violence on January 6th. But now you're seeing in legislatures around the country efforts to use the democratic process itself to thwart the democratic outcome of the voters. Things like really suppressing access to the vote, And really more ominously, transferring authority for certification from nonpartisan commissions or secretaries of state to a partisan legislature. So this battle for the heart of our democracy continues.
Got Matt Dickinson here from Middlebury College who has a few questions for you as well. Matt, go right ahead.
Congressman Welch, again, thank you for taking these questions. I wonder if we can switch to domestic politics. And I know you, as a cautious politician, aren't going to assume anything. But you are running for the Senate, and the odds are that you're going to win. And if you do, there's not a small probability that you may be in the minority party. So it seems to me that raises some questions about whether you should be supporting the filibuster or not. And I wondered if you could address that question. Are you in support of continuing it? Do you prefer carve-outs on specific issues like voting rights? I know you've pushed heavily on the voting rights bill. Or where do you stand on that?
I oppose the filibuster. And I'll tell you why. First of all, the filibuster is not part of the Constitution. That's number one. Number two, the filibuster has been theoretically about protecting minority rights. What has happened is the filibuster has become a vehicle for minority rule. It's been abused. And in fact, the filibuster used to be requiring senators to stand on the floor and talk until they couldn't talk anymore. And that would have a limit as to how long anybody could give a speech. Now, all Mitch McConnell has to do, or anyone, is just to file a notice with the Senate that we're going to filibuster. And it doesn't even take a speech on the floor, a talking filibuster, so-called. So what you have is the rampant abuse of this, and it is abused so that the minority doesn't even allow there to be a vote. Okay, it doesn't even allow a vote on such fundamental things as voting rights. And of course, historically, the filibuster was largely used to thwart progress on civil rights. So no, I am against the filibuster, even as I am absolutely in favor of minority rights. In fact, you know, my history, when I was Senate president here in Vermont, I appointed Republicans to serve as chairs of committees. I want everybody to have a seat at the table, but I don't want the abuse of the filibuster to stop Congress from having the ability, the Senate from having the ability to vote on matters of importance to the American people.
I wonder if I could follow up on another topic. And clearly, this is something that will come up in the campaign. You are going to be giving up a seat in the House, one in which you've accrued some seniority. You're in a good position to represent the interests of Vermonters. And moving to the Senate, where that seniority doesn't translate directly, why not stay in the House where you arguably have more influence and also open up the seat for a new generation in the Senate, one that is perhaps more likely to elect a candidate who is from a different generation, a different gender. How do you respond to those criticisms that you're sort of clogging up the seat?
Yeah, sure. Well, there's two things. First of all, the urgency of the challenges we face require action now. There's two things that are profoundly at stake. One is the preservation of our democracy. That's imperiled. And number two is the direction of our country. Are we going to go back to a Trump kind of administration that denies science, denies climate change is real? Those are not issues that can wait 20 or 30 years for somebody to get seniority. We have to be on those day one. And the second thing is that this peril to our democracy requires an all-hands-on-deck approach. Everybody anywhere has to do whatever they can. And we each have to make our decisions as how we can contribute. And the decision I made is that because I have been building relationships and have been effective in the House and have relationships in the Senate, that I believe I can be very, very helpful right now to face these things that can't wait. So those are the reasons. And I respect the decisions everybody is making about how they think they can help. But the final thing, Matt, when you're in Congress, if you're the chair of a committee of particular influence, of course, Senator Leahy is a really good example of that, the chair of the Appropriations Committee. But other than that, what's much more important than seniority is your relationships, your credibility, your energy, and how you work. Because we have And that's where I've been effective. It's not because of seniority. It's because of the effort, the energy, and the issues that I work on.
You raise a great issue, and you've alluded to your experience here in the Vermont legislature. And we have a tradition of civility, and you don't see that. And January 6th, I think, is probably a starker reminder of the polarization in Congress and the reaction to the January 6th events. How going forward do you work to break down those barriers of polarization that seem just to afflict Congress even more than other political institutions?
Yeah, I work at it every single day. But let me tell you, I see the existential issue for us is about the preservation of democracy. So one of the people that I work with now that I never in a million years thought I would be is Congresswoman Cheney. She is a stand-up woman when it comes to defending the right of the voters to decide who our president is. And that effort to find people across who are committed to democracy as opposed to authoritarianism, that's an area where I'll continue to reach out and work with anybody who has that commitment, because that's the existential issue we face. The other thing is that I find that if democracy works and if you get concrete about the challenges we face, like, for instance, we're having huge issues about how much it costs for these traveling nurses, and our hospitals are getting ripped off, paying millions and millions of dollars. And a lot of these private equity companies are basically driving this. I've talked to Republican colleagues whose hospitals are having the same problem, and I'll find a way to work with them. So it's in that interaction on working on concrete things where you can potentially build trust. So that's what I do. But I really think that every one of us, whether it's at the school board level, it's on a civic organization, we have to be reaching out, trying to solve problems together, acknowledge that we face problems in common, and that democracy is our best ally to make progress on difficult issues.
Congressman Peter Welch, I want to thank you very much for your time this morning. I know we went a little over in what we requested, but thank you very much for spending the time with us.
No, it's great to be with you and Professor Dickinson, too. Thank you very much.
All right. We look forward to having you back the show again soon. We do have political scientist Matt Dickinson with us for the rest of the hour. And listeners, now we'd like to hear your thoughts about what you witnessed a year ago today in Washington, D.C. Our number is 802-244-1777, 877-291-8255, and the email address vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. We're back on Vermont Viewpoint. There are moments that remain indelibly etched in our consciousness. Depending on your age, that could be news of the assassinations of President John F. Kennedy, of Martin Luther King, of Robert Kennedy, the Space Shuttle Challenger disaster, 9/11. 1 year ago, another sad, dramatic catastrophe played out on national television and social media when, on the afternoon of January 6th, we watched a large group march from the White House to the U.S. Capitol and attack police officers so they could storm into the building. Middlebury College political science professor Matt Dickinson is with me this hour to share his thoughts about the day and the aftermath. And listeners, this is your opportunity to share your thoughts of what you witnessed that day. You can call us 802-244-1777 or 877-291-8255. Matt, what were you thinking as you watched the events unfold a year ago today?
Well, my thoughts changed during the process. What seemed to me to be a rather festive, raucous, fairly typical Trump rally, as I watched the events unfold and it began to degenerate into mob violence, I, like a lot of Americans, became horrified and also asked, how could this happen? And again, there has been a history in recent elections of the losing side questioning the legitimacy of the winning side, and I understand that. But this pushed that process of questioning to a whole new level, and the symbolism of seeing a crowd in the Capitol, the seat of democracy, I think it was more than disturbing for most Americans.
Yeah. Let's take a call from Forbes. Forbes, how are you doing today?
Oh, great. defense of the activities that happened at the Capitol. That's defenseless as far as the actual activity.
Yeah.
My question has been, and it still isn't answered, but what perpetuated the situation? In other words, was it the loss of the election by Trump, or was it a question of some voter integrity throughout the country? Mm-hmm. And that still hasn't been answered for me, but has it? You're close to the source. Has that been answered?
Yeah, Forbes, great question. Was it just the fact that Donald Trump lost the election, or was it that there's the belief that he lost the election unfairly? I have an email from RC who says Trump had some good ideas. It's no wonder people were upset. We are in a progressive-run country. So, Matt Dickinson, let's kind of dive into the root again of, you know, what caused that foment and, you know, an anger that reached a level we never thought, you know, was possible, that people would cross that thin blue line, attack Capitol police officers, you know, force their way into the U.S. Capitol and, I think, look for individuals to harm because of the anger. So what was it? Just the loss? Was it a belief that this was a stolen election?
I think there was a mix of motives when you're trying to explain what happened. I think part of it certainly starts at the top with a defeated president. Even before the election, laying the groundwork for what we now call the big lie, in which his defenders call the big steal, this notion that the election was fraudulent. For many Republicans, and a significant number still argue that Biden's election was, in some sense, illegitimate. And as I noted, that's not new. We've seen that recently. But some of the voting changes that took place at that time, and they were perfectly justifiable in terms of COVID, but they were the movement, for instance, to vote by mail in certain states and so on. That allowed, I think, the base, the activists, to make the claim that the only reason these changes were being made was to help Democrats. Now, when you think about the actual events of the day, I think of those roughly 3,000 people, probably 2,500 were there as sort of a peaceful protest and hearing Donald Trump, but there were people who came from these right-wing fringe groups that showed up with the explicit intent to do violence. And I think a mob mentality took place, and people just got caught up in the emotions, even many who had no intention of storming the barricades, and they just ended up doing that. So I think it was an unfortunate confluence of a lot of factors, but a lot of it emanates from the top.
Yeah, and I'm glad you made that point. You know, if there were 3,000, 2,500 came to protest in a manner that would have ended somewhat peacefully, but you had an agitation of, say, 500 members that just whipped things into a frenzy. And sometimes in a mob, and we only have about a minute here, but in a mob, people lose all sense of what is right and what is wrong.
Yeah, I think we lose sight of that immediacy of the emotional reaction, what was going on, and the impact of social media. I mean, what has really changed is people can, in real time, show people what's going on here, and I think that also inflamed emotions.
Yeah, isn't it interesting? Boy, it's tough to remember what life was like before social media and having that instantaneous action right at your fingertips on that phone that you're carrying, basically a computer with you at all times. We've got Matt Dickinson of Middlebury College. He'll be with me discussing January 6, 2021 up till 11 o'clock. We're going to take a break for a CBS News update. And when we come back, further discussion, and we want to hear more of your thoughts. Our number is 802-244-1777, 877-291-8255. You can also email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. And a reminder that coming up today at 11, after Vermont Viewpoint, we've got Common Sense Radio with Bill Sayre. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
Warren Village is a picture-perfect snow globe this time of year. We invite you to visit us at the almost world-famous Warren store. Come for breakfast, lunch, or après-ski. Have a signature deli sandwich, a hearty soup, or a specialty coffee drink paired with a sweet treat from our incredible bakery. Upstairs is a cornucopia of delightful and unique finds from men's, women's, and children's clothing to gifts, toys, games, jewelry, hats, gloves, and scarves. Best one-stop shopping in Vermont, according to Yankee Magazine. Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. Warren Store, Main Street, Warren Village, and warrenstore.com.
This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. The phones are open until 11 as Middlebury College political science professor Matt Dickinson and I discuss the attack on the Capitol a year ago today. You can jump on the line at 802-244-1777 or 877-291-8255 or email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. Before the break, we were talking about the election losing, voter fraud. You know, this attack was to stop the election being certified because of claims it was stolen, Matt. You follow this more closely than I, but have I missed any states finding voter fraud that shifted electoral votes from Biden to Trump in the 14 months since the election?
No. I do follow this closely. There has been no evidence. Obviously, there's irregularities. You find that in any presidential election, but there's no evidence that those irregularities led to widespread fraud or in any way affected the outcome of the vote in any of these states. It's just not there.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We've got Gary from Barry joining us. Hi, Gary. Go right ahead.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
But one thought is that I think January 6th insurrection didn't happen just on that day. I think it's been coming for a while.
Yeah.
And we let our guard down. We weren't prepared. Democracy is, I feel, is vulnerable, and people need to get involved, and we need to be listening for something that's coming along all the time. This was probably a good rude awakening for the country.
Gary, that's an excellent point. You know, it is kind of the nadir, Matt, you know, in of democracy in this country, and you know, a wake up call. Are we heeding that call? Are we getting more involved? Are we you know, re-embracing democracy since a year ago till today?
I think the caller's warnings are prescient. We take democracy for granted. We take the idea that there is a history of peaceful transfer of power for granted. But the reality, as I alluded to earlier, is that there has been a recurring pattern in which the losing party in presidential elections has questioned the legitimacy of the winner. This isn't to understate the escalation of that we see in January 6th, but there's a deeper problem here, and it's partly a product that we have two parties that are so ideologically cohesive. And so evenly matched in elections that our elected officials have found it in their self-interest to delegitimize the opposing party rather than accept that they were the winners and work with them. And I think that's very problematic for democracy when you're basically questioning the very mechanism by which you allow voters to express their sense of direction for the future of the country.
Now, what's interesting is there's – you know, it's almost, you know, a third of Republicans, a third Democrats, and a third independent, which is not a party, and yet, you know, could sway, it definitely sways elections one way or the other. But is it time for, you know, a party of the middle ground or a party that, you know, doesn't tie themselves to, you know, the Democrats or Republicans to rise and, you know, kind of break this this gridlock of two major parties?
Well, you're precisely right. The percentage of individuals who identify as independents is really the largest that we've ever seen in this country, and that reflects a dissatisfaction with both of the major parties,
right?
Which a lot of people feel that they've been captured by, you know, donors and political activists on the right and the left. The problem is you have to move from sort of dissatisfaction with the existing parties to organizing a third-party movement that involves, you know, coordinated action. It involves getting candidates to run. Registration in states is often more difficult for independent parties. So there's a lot of logistical hurdles. And the other thing you see is moderates who make the mistake of working across the aisle are attacked by activists in their own party. They're primaried. Donors pour money into opponents, whether it's, you know, challenging a Susan Collins in Maine or somebody on the left, a moderate representative who's primaried on the left. This makes it difficult to translate this clear dissatisfaction with the existing parties into a viable third-party movement.
I thought John Anderson was going to get it done way back when.
Ross Perot.
There's another one.
Right.
Absolutely. All right, let's go back to the phones, this time to Middlebury, and talk to Linda. Good morning, Linda.
Hi. I just wanted to share my experience of last year in that watching this on TV, not only was I horrified, I was scared. I was crying. I was pacing. I was supposed to go out that night with friends. I'm like, I can't. I'm just too much of a wreck. It really shook me to my core. I'm an active Democrat in my area, but I still feel pretty helpless and really scared for our future.
Thank you,
Linda.
Yeah. And Matt, if I remember correctly, I think it was Mitch McConnell was at the podium and making a wonderful speech about coming together when all this started to happen, you know, and you could see images of what was going on outside the Capitol and, you know, seeing what seemed like to be this seminal moment of coming together being just shattered. And, you know, much like Linda, I mean, I was shaken. I was physically shaken by the images that start to unfold before my eyes. It was just the scariest moment that I can remember in the democracy.
Well, again, the symbolism of the Capitol being overrun by rioters, I think, really shook people's fundamental belief that, yeah, we can disagree, and yeah, 147 Republicans are going to vote to overturn the presidential election. But that's not violence. That doesn't happen here in the United States, and yet we saw it happening. And the second thing is, while this is unfolding, there's uncertainty about how widespread this feeling is. Do these people represent a broader movement? Is this the center of gravity of one of the two parties in this country? We simply didn't know, a lot of us at the time, because we couldn't have conceived that a protest could turn in this direction.
Yeah. All right. Barrytown next with Lee. Hi, Lee.
Yes. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning.
And as well as your professor guest.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of thoughts. First, you are wading into political waters, if you'll permit a metaphor here, mm-hmm. that are extremely dangerous and got your predecessor fired, actually. So I would suggest to you, Rick, that you've been scrupulous in keeping your shows apolitical, and I admired that. I wasn't a big Rick Sangeri fan when you first came on the air with DEV, but you've surprised me pleasantly, and I've enjoyed your programming. Generally speaking.
Okay.
But this is a dangerous topic to get into. We're very divided as a country right now.
Mm-hmm.
And what we witnessed a year ago, any thinking person would agree it was abhorrent. No one can defend what happened at the Capitol. Likewise, no one can defend what we see on the streets in our major cities in this country today. The unbridled murder rates in most of our major cities are breaking all kinds of records
mm-hmm.
now. We see grab-and-go events that are the likes of which I've never seen in my life, and I've been around a long time. So as we assess what happened a year ago, and I would ask your guest, professor, this question, if we take the pulse of America right now, what are we seeing, and what does it bode for the future? Are we hopelessly divided, or is there any way this country can ever recover its sense of nationalism, which is not a bad word, mm-hmm. and pride in America and pride in the flag. I've seen so many horrific things happen in America in the last two decades that caused me to wonder if we can ever get back to where we were. So I'll leave it at that.
Thanks, Lee.
Listen off the air.
Okay.
And, thank you both.
All right. Thanks for calling. Matt Dickinson, that question's for you.
Well, this may be hard to believe on January 6th, but there is a lot of evidence to suggest that on fundamental values, Americans are not deeply polarized, that we share much more in common across the partisan aisle than you might think based on the events of January 6th. Again, we have to remember there's roughly 3,000 people who stormed the Capitol. Of those, maybe 2,500 were caught up in the emotions, many of whom did not even go in the Capitol. And we should not, I think, generalize from that core group that was intent on overturning the election to Republicans more generally, who, as the caller rightly said, abhorred what happened there. But more generally, when we think about our parties in Congress, yeah, they're deeply polarized. They are, for better or for worse, beholden to their donor base and to their activists and so on. But that's not reflective of most people who call themselves Democrats or Republicans. They're much more interested in issues like COVID, getting my kids to school, how do I pay for gasoline? And they want a party or elected officials that address those issues. I think sometimes we get too caught up in what's happening on cable TV and what drives social media ratings and what, frankly, Rick, pushes the audience to react and call into radio shows from the reality experienced by most Americans. We are not a divided nation, and I spend a lot of my time giving talks showing evidence that we are not as politically divided as you might think by focusing, for instance, on January 6th.
Wow. That is a great point, Matt, and hope as we move forward here beyond this anniversary of January. So let's go to Michael in Waitsfield. Hi, Michael.
Hi. So I got two things to say. This is such an outrageous situation that we had this January 6th. I know that this is not their role, but isn't there a time where we have four ex-presidents still alive that should be speaking out on general things, not super partisan or political things. But if they're not going to speak out about this, when are they ever going to speak up about? That's how important I think most Americans think this January 6th situation was.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other situation is, now that we have news 24/7, and we always know that this news only sells the car crash and bad news, that is a bad situation we have now too. We think that the war, not only in the United States, but the whole world is involved with bad news. We know that there's much more good news than there is bad news.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot possibly ever get good news out. Most people are not involved with all this violence that's going on in the world, even though there is a lot of violence.
Right.
But you only hear about violence only.
Yeah.
Nothing about good news.
Much more isolated incidences. Michael, thank you so much for your call. First of all, Matt, the role of ex-presidents, Michael brings up, and that's very interesting. What is their responsibility, in maintaining democracy and finding ways to unify?
Well, I think they have a role to play, and I think they tried to play that role. If you'll recall, all of the ex-presidents came out in one form or another to basically condemn both President Trump's remarks about the illegitimacy of Biden's election, but more generally about the events of January 6th. So they've been pretty vocal about that. The other point that the caller makes is an important one. I think it's always been the case that if it bleeds, it leads for some of the media. The worry, and we're not quite sure, we're still studying this, is with the advent of social media, it allows at least potentially a little more siloing in terms of our media sources. We can isolate ourselves from opposing viewpoints, and there is a worry that that sort of balkanizes public discourse and leads to what we call negative polarization, the idea that the other side has somehow become not just the opposition, but they're inherently evil.
Right.
I think that is a worry, although, again, I wouldn't overstate that. We have to differentiate between the political activists and the loudest voices in the room and what the majority of Americans believe.
Yeah. And it is interesting when we sit down and talk to somebody with opposing views, we find, well, there's a lot of common ground, as you mentioned earlier, Matt. I can understand why they have different views on this specific point. Let's now go to Eden. Time to talk to Brian. Hi, Brian. Always great to have you on.
Hey, how are you? Good. I had 2 points here. One is just, Rick, you're doing a great job, and it says something about our society that defending the Constitution is considered a partisan thing now. The bigger picture is I've heard a lot of people defending – I hang out with all different people. A lot of people defending the rioters, and it's – they always equate – well, they go Black Lives Matter protests, and, mm-hmm. and they've been doing this in Congress too. The big difference, I guess, and it's just so obvious, Joe Biden wasn't telling people to go burn down buildings in Seattle. Joe Biden wasn't telling people to go out in the streets and raise hell. And so, you know, I mean, it's just such an obvious difference. So I just wanted to point that out.
Thanks, Brian. You know, Matt, there is that it almost seems like a deflection technique in defending what happened on January 6th to bring up other riots. You know, the other day someone called in and mentioned them back in the 60s or that have been, the Watts riots or the King riots in L.A. It seems like a deflection to me, and no one is defending those riots and saying those were good and this was bad. I keep saying peaceful protest. There's nothing wrong with that. But, Is there a parallel between the riots that happened around the country compared to what happened in Washington, D.C. last January 6th?
Well, at a superficial level, it is the case that in both instances, and we should be clear here, most of the Black Lives Matter protests have been peaceful. There's been very little violence. Having said that, one can make the argument that when there are fundamental issues at stake regarding having your voice heard, sometimes the defense is, in order to be heard, I had to take extreme measures. So in that sense, you might argue there's some similarity, but I think the caller is exactly right. The difference here is you had an elected officials who – it's one thing to protest and argue that there were voting changes that shouldn't have taken place, but undermine the integrity of the election, I think, strikes to the heart of democracy. And that's a fundamental difference. And January 6th, I think, because it occurred at the Capitol, takes on a symbolic importance that I think transcends these other types of protests, even the ones that went and became violent.
Yeah. I want to read this email. Came from Dean, and he says, just wanted to comment for this morning, the anniversary of January 6th. President Biden used most of his speech today to emphasize the legitimacy of the November 2020 election and judge the anger of those who are suspicious of the November 2020 election results. His point was basically that they shouldn't have stormed the Capitol because the election was fair. This is completely illogical reasoning. They shouldn't have stormed the Capitol, period. Many math and statistics folks question patterns in the election data, whether there's evidence of election fraud. Many are suspicious of math, and for some, that's the evidence. Right or wrong, many mistrust the results. Oh, hold on, I lost it. Many mistrust the results. Their convictions are justified in their own minds, and they're free to have those ideas. They're not free to act out on those convictions in certain ways. I think that is a really First of all, good critique of the president's address, but he makes a really valid point. You can have problems with this election. You can't storm and try to kill people inside the Capitol. Matt?
Precisely right. I couldn't have said it better myself. If you don't like the election changes in the process, the early voting, the vote by mail, the willingness to count ballots after, we have a mechanism for changing that. It's called elections. It's called changing your officials. Our system cannot survive if a significant number of individuals believe it's all right to overturn the mechanisms by which we allow individuals to express their views in order to impose our own view. It just doesn't work. There has to be a fundamental commitment to the fundamental processes of democracy in order for democracy to work.
Matt Dickinson is a political science professor at Middlebury College. Matt, it's an election year. It should be an exciting one, so I look forward to speaking to you again soon as more statewide races take shape. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Rick, for having me.
All right, take care. And I want to thank Matt again for being on last year on January 7th. He was on the entire 2 hours the day after that riot. That is our show for today. Vermont Viewpoint is directed by Danny McGivergan. Our email address, vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. We've got Common Sense Radio with Bill Sayre up next. I'm Rick Zingari. I'll meet you back here tomorrow. We're going to speak with Bob Ney. We're going to discuss award-winning cheese and what's happening in Georgia, Vermont.